I don't know about you, but I'm glad that I'm preaching this series of lessons right now. Because when I see on the TV that a company that has taken a stand for Christian family principles, that a group of immoral people have decided that they're going to have kiss-ins at their locations and hug-ins at their locations, then there's a part of me that wants to do something other than what the Lord tells me to do. And so these lessons are good for me. And I don't know if in my lifetime there could have been a time that is more timely than this time is. We're living in, or at least have been living, and or are living in a time that's called a postmodern age. Postmodernism is a term that has no real clear definition. It just kind of mirrors its effect on society. Postmodernism is a reaction to a society which has assumed objectivity, meaning that science and religion and history, every area of life, that there are objective principles that can be known about them and that are definitive. Postmodernism is a rejection of all things traditional. Its premise is that there are no absolutes which apply to everyone. Its goal is to obtain freedom for every individual to determine your own truth and your own reality. And the result is there is no right and there is no wrong. The principle that's taking a beating in all of this is truth. What is truth? Can we know truth? Is it something that can be known? Until the last three or four decades, most of our society has operated with the general belief that there is such a thing as definitive absolute truth. We argued about who had it or where it was, but most people generally believe that there was such a thing as knowable absolute truth. But that's changing. Our society today is aggressively accepting the belief that there is no one single truth that can be known either by observation or by revelation. But rather, there are many truths. And truth, it is believed, is simply the result of how you perceive your own environment. Thus, everyone has our own truth, and each one is equally valid. And there's no area of life that escapes its influence. It's rapidly becoming the role of government and education to make everyone feel good about themselves, regardless of your knowledge, your belief system, or your lifestyle. History is being rewritten. Heroes are becoming villains, and villains are becoming heroes. George Washington once believed and touted to be the most beloved of all of our presidents has now become a rich, slave-owning capitalist oppressor. In order for a new philosophy to gain acceptance in a society, the first thing that has to happen is your current belief system has to be disproved and rejected. There's been lots of effort that is expended to criticize traditionalism, accepted beliefs, accepted truths. Would you say that we're witnessing some of that in our society today? Communists know that. They know that you have to undermine the belief system that people have held, and religion becomes the enemy because it is communism, this set of beliefs, and I would also say the tenets of postmodernism have not, they're not only a philosophy, but it is a religion and also a government. very much like communism. And so anything that competes with it, and religion is the chief competitor, has to be crushed. Tolerance is the concept that's used to make this new way of thinking palatable. Not only palatable, but appealing. Intolerance has been redefined in such a way as to become a manipulative club for political correctness, to get everybody in line, conformity. And the word tolerance is certainly used as a fearsome club in that regard today. Has religion been affected by these changes? Obviously, it has. Historically, by the denial of the role that religion played in the founding of this nation, that's been brought under severe questioning, hadn't it? And denial, even. The role of religious conviction of the writers of our Constitution. Have you noticed how much attack there has been singling out every single one of the signers of our Constitution, trying to prove that they did not have religious convictions? It had nothing to do with religion. Why do you suppose there is such an attack against religion? We noticed in lesson number 2 that in this society of new tolerance, there's only one thing that is intolerable, and that's someone that claims to know what truth is. Of all the things that can be tolerated, that's the one thing that cannot be tolerated. And therein comes the attack against religion. And Christian, that makes you the target for persecution and ridicule. Religion is an enemy, unless religion will concede to teach that all religions are equally true and valid. We're at a historical crossroads in this country and in our world. Will we stand on the Bible as truth, or will we compromise? I'd like to use, I'm going back a few years, I know, but it just really serves to illustrate my purpose. And for my own reasons, I want to avoid any more particulars about our immediate circumstances than is absolutely necessary. So we can go back historically. Perhaps you remember of the firestorm of controversy that was fanned into flame by the announcement of former President Jimmy Carter and his wife Rosalind when they announced their break from the Southern Baptist Association because the Southern Baptist Association had become too conservative. It wasn't too long after he had served as president that they decided that they could no longer be affiliated with the Southern Baptist Association. And there were two specific issues that were given as reasons why they were making that break. And one was because the Southern Baptist Association maintained a position that a woman should lovingly submit to her husband. That was one. And the other had to do with the narrow view that the Southern Baptist Association was taking on the homosexual agenda. And because of those two things, they made the headlines that they were making a break with the Southern Baptist Association. And shortly after that, there were political cartoons which came out in many newspapers depicting the Southern Baptist Association as angry cavemen with clubs who were driving out this pious couple, the Carters. And critics said, and headlines read, "They have chosen," speaking of the Southern Baptist Association, "they have chosen the Bible over Jesus." Now that sounds good, doesn't it? You need to stop and think what the implication is. The implication is the Bible and Jesus contradict one another and you have to make a choice. And they've chosen the Bible over Jesus. Jesus contradicts the Bible, that would say. So goes the reasoning. Now, why do I bring this up? Simply as an illustration of the moral issues of our day. and the mindset that has been created by postmodernism. It's not an isolated incident. It's happening today. And people that take a stand for true values and biblical principles are being held up to public ridicule. Similar divisions are happening in every religious group and every public organization in our country. What's the issue? You know what the issue is. Is the Bible true? Or is it one view no better or no worse than other truths? And that's the choice that every person will make. And by the way, it's not a new choice. It's a choice that every person has always had to make. It's just more clearly defined now than it's ever been in our lifetime. And the lines are being drawn more sharply than they've ever been in our lifetime. Not than they've ever been in the world, the history of the world, but than that they have ever been in the history of our country. There are three possible choices available to you regarding the Bible and its relevance and its truthfulness. Number one, you can accept the Bible as God's true inspired word. Number two, you can reject the Bible as being inspired, something that's simply contrived by man. Or thirdly, you can straddle the fence and take the position that the Bible contains truth. And you can try to make it contradictory and uncertain. Or in my terminology, you can live in a world where all cats are gray. The option number three is the option of choice. For those who want to retain the reputation of being religious and being a Christian, but who want the right to make the Bible say whatever they want it to say. Choose which parts you want to accept. And which parts you can't accept. Let me give you another illustration. Some time back, there was an article, an AP article that was written. It was entitled Phase 2 for Female Rabbis. And Phase 2 purportedly came into existence when the conservative arm of the Jewish religion, Orthodox Judaism, had their first female rabbi selected. And her name is Amy Eilberg. And she says the women needed to play by the rules defined by the majority to achieve equality. So they suppressed their, quote, dangerous uniqueness to demonstrate legitimacy. But in phase two, she says, which we're now entering, women should no longer force themselves to imitate stereotypical male styles and standards. And that includes rereading the Bible through feminist eyes, Eilberg asserts, in the foreword of the Women's Torah Commentary. The book's lead-off topic, unsurprisingly, is Eve, who is treated by Rabbi Lori Foreman, a pioneer conservative female rabbi and official of New York City's Jewish Federation. The man and woman are made simultaneously in Genesis 1, writes Foreman, but in Genesis 2, the woman seems an afterthought formed from Adam's rib. But some Talmudic rabbis said that word also means side, implying that the original human being of Genesis 1 was bisexual, and the genders originated when God separated two equal halves in Genesis 2. Interesting, isn't it? What we can get. Eve is often portrayed, she continued, as an empty-headed wife who all too willingly fell into sin, or as the cunning seductress who lured Adam. These ugly views of Eve have paved the way for all Western religion traditions to denigrate women, Foreman says, perhaps more in Christianity than in Judaism. She continues, More radically, the rabbi upholds Eve as an exemplar adventurer with curiosity against Jewish tradition that sees her as simply disobeying God. Without Eve's boldness, she says, human history as we know it would never have come to pass. Women would recast, or should recast Eve as the woman who reached for what was good and pleasant and intellectually empowering. And I could go on. That's enough, though, huh? Isn't it interesting how our philosophy forces us to reinterpret the scriptures in light of what we want to believe? This allows you to take the position that the Bible contains truth. It allows you to pick and choose in what you want to believe and reinterpret the Bible in light of liberated thought. You see, the issue has always been, what is truth? It's always been that, and it always will be. And in our next lesson, our last lesson, we're going to see how this is affecting churches of Christ. There may be in all of this, I think, a blessing, albeit a really difficult one. And it's embodied in, I think, an extremely applicable passage. Paul is writing to the Christians at Corinth, and he says, no doubt there have to be differences among you to show which of you has God's approval. Now that really does sink in to me right now. No doubt there have to be differences among you to show which of you has God's approval. 1 Corinthians 11:19. When it really costs you something, we've been really blessed in this country, haven't we? When it really costs you something to be a Christian, where will you be? Where will you stand? Who will stay? And who will go? Who will compromise? You remember the point in Jesus' ministry when the crowd realized that he wasn't going to be pressured or intimidating into doing their bidding? Specifically, continuing to feed them in John 6. You remember that? He had just fed the 5,000, and then he got in a boat and came across to the other side of Galilee, and the next day they found him there and wanted to know where he had been. And Jesus said, I know why you followed me. You followed me because you want me to feed you again. And then he began a discourse on the bread of life. And that really turned them off. And when they realized that they could not manipulate him and control him and cause him to do what they wanted to, then it says, from this time on, many of his disciples turned back and no longer followed him. John 6:66. Because he wouldn't be their guy. Because he wouldn't conform to what they wanted. And then John continues in the next two verses. Jesus turned to the 12 and he says, will you also go away? Simon said, and you know what he said, don't you? Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. What's the alternative? Well, it's not very good, is it? And it's not very pleasant not to take the alternative in this life. Jesus said, and let's just put it right on the table, why the world hates Christianity. Because Jesus said, I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life. No man comes to the Father except by me. And in a tolerant world that cannot be tolerated, it will not be tolerated. There will be all kind of pressures that will be brought to bear on anyone who takes a stand on that. And there's an incredible, incredible pressure to compromise that truth. And to say, I am a way, a truth, and I am one way to the Father. But that's not what he said. And Jesus said, if you deny me before men, I'll deny you before my Father who's in heaven. you own me, I'll own you. I'll claim you. And you know, it's interesting that the book of Revelation, the last book and the last page in your Bible, ends with, I warn everyone who hears the words of the prophecy of this book, if anyone adds anything to them, God will add to him the plagues described in this book. And if anyone takes words away from this book of prophecy, God will take away from him his share in the tree of life and the holy city, which are described in this book. And people object and say, well, he's just talking about the book of Revelation. He's not talking about the whole Bible. And I won't argue with you. I think you're probably right. I think that is probably what he's talking about. But what's applicable to that book is also applicable to everything that God said. And so as Christians, before we have to face a real test in our life that may really, really cost us a job or maybe even a life, then we need to make our minds up what our answer is going to be before we get there. We need to know what our answer is going to be. We need to make it plain to ourselves, to God, to our family, and to everybody around us. Because, you see, God is the same yesterday, today, and forever. He doesn't change. God does love us. He loves everyone. But God cannot tolerate, he cannot coexist with sin. And righteousness exalts a nation. Sin's reproach to any people. And that's our nation. And it's been a glorious thing that we have, that God has blessed us with to live in this country. Moral issues of our day. There were some people in the Old Testament of which it was said they knew the times and they knew what needed to be done. And that's us as Christians. We know. We can see the times. And we know what needs to be done on our individual basis. And if there has been in your heart and in your life a fear that you don't know what your answer would be if it came down to giving your life, Revelation will talk about those who God blessed because they did not love their lives unto death. They wouldn't give up, regardless of what the cost was. They're still, God's people are still that same way today. That there is something more important to us in life. And that is that we stay and stand with God on His Word and His truth, regardless of what the cost may be. If you cast your lot with God, there's difficulty on the road. If you cast your lot against God, there's difficulty on the road. And you just get to choose when and where and what that difficulty will be. Will you pay the price, whatever that price may be, now in this life? Or will you push it back and pay a price later when you stand before God? Let's stand and sing.
Sweet are the promises, kind is the word, dear.